So we have a slightly different passage today. I was challenged a couple of weeks ago by an ad that was released by the Gillette Corporation. Much time went into this 90-minute spot. Gillette, just so you know, is the largest maker of men's razors in the world. They make, in fact, over half of the razors across the globe are all made by the Gillette Corporation. It's owned by Procter & Gamble, one of the largest companies in the world. For 30 years, the jingle, the motto of Gillette was, "The best man can get." Very unusual for a company to have the same motto for many, many, many years. And so they held on to that tightly until 2 weeks ago. And they changed the name of their campaign from "The best man can get" to "The best man can be." And they were trying to make a statement, trying to draw attention to both not just their product, but the world around them and the men and the decisions that they were making and what was going on. The advertisement was designed to get everyone's attention, and it did. 20 million people saw it within the first release, and tens of millions more watched it within days of its release. It was interesting that 20, 30 years ago, a message took about a day to get around the United States or a day to get around the globe. Today, we all have smartphones, we all have computers, we all have, we're all completely attached. And so within minutes of something happening, we can now hear about it, we now know about it. We don't have to wait for a week. This challenges Christians, if you want to think about that. We don't really have time to process it. We don't really have time to filter. Sometimes information is coming at us so fast, and the World Wide Web is right at our fingertips. It's almost instantaneous. The ad was also meant to provoke. It had several strong messages in there. If you did not see it, I'll give you a brief summary of what it said. The ad starts out with a bunch of boys running through a piece of paper. It's similar to the paper that you see in a football game where the guys charge through while running onto the field. From there, they're yelling and screaming. It seems to be completely out of control. There's a narrator in the background that talks briefly about bullying. And there's flashes of what looks like a frat party or spring break. And essentially, it shows what's happening in some of these places where the Me Too movement has been prominent. And then it goes into the boardroom quickly and says, it shows a scene of a CEO kind of denigrating a woman that was on the board as well. So it's an entire scene set up the next, the kind of climax where all the guys sitting around the barbecues say, "Boys will be boys. Boys will be boys," over and over and over again. "Boys will be boys." And in the end, it kind of takes a corner. And it actually turns the corner to where, that's what we should be doing. There's a picture of an African American teaching his daughter self-confidence, and teaching his daughter that she is valuable. So, and then it says, what is the best a man can be? They give their opinion, quite frankly. And some of it's good. Some of it's positive. I can't fault all of it. It obviously has a very humanistic point to it. It has a very humanistic view. But if you want to just Google Gillette ad, you will see it. It will kind of come right all over your screen. But it's also convicting in some areas. It's quite negative toward men. It's quite negative toward masculinity. And it talks about, we need to grow up. We have tainted a lot of the world through our masculinity, and that we need to shape up. So I sat and thought about that for a while, and thought, what does the Bible say about masculinity? What does it say about, the man and his role? So I turned to Genesis 1, 26 and 27. I don't know if you have a chance to grab that twice. Genesis 1, 26 and 27. I'll use the English Standard Version. So then God said, let us make image man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. Now, interesting here, the word for man is Adam. In Hebrew, when you look up Adam, we think of it as his name, but actually that's a word. The word means Adam. It'd be like if we had a society in our language, we called him man. And so man takes on actually the name man, which is kind of interesting. In the New Testament, God follows it up. He says in Matthew 14, verse 4, he says, he answered, have you not read who created them from the beginning? I made them male and female. Now our verses tonight are pretty succinct, but powerful. And the topic is one of the most controversial in the church and in larger society. If you've been sitting here for 15 minutes tonight and haven't been offended yet, just hang around, we'll get you. Your turn is coming. I also won't be addressing everything. I wrote about a couple things that I won't talk about. I'm going to talk about the role of women in the church. I'm not crazy. And I'm going to address the Me Too movement. I think the Bible is very clear about abuse, and it's very clear on how we are to treat people. So I'm not going to hit that tonight either. But it does start with an overarching premise. Genesis 1 verse 26 tells us, then God said, let us make man in our likeness. How many times have you read that through and just glossed over that without comprehending what all the implications are? When I was, in exploring the Bible and what exploring masculinity means, we have to start with that. The foundation is that that's how it's created. That's the image of God. If you did not have this as your bedrock, if this isn't the basis of your paradigm, then you will have missed the entire premise of it, and you will have come up with a faulty answer. If gender is not an element of the original design, then suddenly inaccuracies and errors of manhood will start to come up. For centuries, many biblical beliefs were held and accepted to be true. Truth was anchored. But as we moved into the 20th century, and as we moved into the 21st century, our indispensable core began to crumble. Man attempted to take over the throne of his or her life, and creatures rejected the Creator. So and this permeated every area of our life. In the year 2005, an attempt was made to translate the entire Bible into a gender-neutral form. In the name of political correctness, they went back through there and took all the hymns out and made it into she or it or whatever was neutral there. Fortunately, believers and scholars around the globe saw this as and rejected this. In fact, by the year 2009, they stopped publishing this Bible altogether and kind of went its way, which we can find to be very fortunate. Now, throughout North American culture, you can see these secular influences chipping away at what God has set up as a biblical concreteness for males and females. Now, if you pull down the government form, or you might see it'll say boy, it'll say girl, it'll say a boy that identifies as a girl, and it'll say a girl that identifies as a boy. Confusion runs amok for who is who and what is what. And that's the influence of humanism and humanity when they try to take over the subject. So the Bible is very clear and it elaborates our differences. While some people might have a muddled thinking about who they are, God is not confused. Mankind was his crowning achievement. Think about it. As he finalized creation and as he uniquely formed them, man was the last and the crowning achievement of what God did when he made man. What does it mean to make man in our image after our likeness? I believe here that Robert Deffenbaugh, he's from the Dallas Theological Seminary, he said this. This is not to say that God is male or female, but that God is both unity and diversity. Man and woman in marriage become one, yet they are distinct. And he kind of uses that image to explain what it means to be that God is both male and female. In verse 27, it says God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female. There's no ambiguity there. Mankind is like God in a way. In a way that is distinguishable from animals. What distinguishes man from animals must therefore be the reflection of God. Man's ability to reason, to communicate at a very high level, to make moral decisions, point out that God, man is uniquely created and that he's appointed by God to rule. The second half of Genesis 1 verse 26 says, "And let them have dominion over the fish of the earth and over every creature that creeps on the earth." Did you catch the pronoun there? Them. It's not him or her, it's them. God himself, he said, they must, your version might say, rule over creation, essentially all the earth. Well, man has been given the function of headship by his order, by his naming of Eve, and by his actually being the source of Eve. Eve is tasked with being a helpmate. And this passage makes clear that both of them are to rule over God's earth. So mankind and his worth and his dignity are not imputed by humanity, but they're intrinsic to God and the image of God. So whereas we might say that, when humanism steps in and says, no, this is what a man is worth or can be worth, we have to step back and say, no, Gillette is wrong. It's the man, a man is all he could be because he is made in the image of God. The second thing I want to point out and dive into is the reality of who man is. I'm going to lean heavily on Scripture to identify these traits. John Eldridge wrote a book. It's called Wild at Heart. And here he explores the very core of maleness. Interestingly, the book is subtitled Discovering the Secret of a Man's Soul. And while I disagree with some of the hermeneutics that he used, he has some very interesting thoughts. The first one, he starts off the book with the premise that man was not made in the garden. I thought that was interesting. We always think of man being made in the garden, but if you read Genesis 2 very closely, there's more detail of where he was made. I'll start at verse 5 there. When no bush of the field was yet in the land, and no plant of the field had yet sprung up, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain on the land, and there was no man to work the ground, and a mist came up from the land and watered the whole face of the earth. And the Lord formed man from the dust from the ground and breathed into the nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living creature. So the bushes had not grown yet. Nothing had grown yet. It's pure wilderness. Now, Aldrich tries to make the point here and say, man was not made in the garden. Man was not created in someone that was tame. Man was created in the wilderness. And he believes, so that's why you have the male nature has a wild streak to it, because that's how and where he was built. Interesting thought. I remember going to Santa Fe to a high school conference, and I was a chaperone there. And as we landed, we saw the San Gabriel Mountains there. We looked up, and they were beautiful. It's a very wild place. And we had an afternoon off of this camp. So we went out there, and one guy looked at us and pointed at the mountain, and we all kind of nodded at him, and sure enough, we got together, and after they said amen, and went running up to the top of the mountain. It was obviously much further than we had thought, and it was also much drier than we had thought. We went up there without a map, we went up there without any water, and pretty soon, when nightfall was coming, we heard some four-wheel drives coming up the mountain. You know, the world is that, and they were coming for us, because we didn't know it yet, and we were lost, and we were probably going to be in danger pretty quickly. So, the director said, no, you're not the first bunch of guys that went running up that mountain without a map, that went running up there with no clue of what you were doing or what you were getting into. But that's how men are created. Sometimes they're created impulsively. They're created to chase things, to live that kind of life. I know, I won't say his name because he's been a member of this church, but I remember the guy once, and he had the same experience. He went skiing, and he saw this incredible slope, and it had a big ramp on it. So wouldn't it be fun to take this big ramp and go and do a somersault on my skis? And it was a great idea. He made it about halfway around and realized he wasn't going to make it the rest of the way. And he landed with his knees in his face. And so for the next 4 weeks, all the meals that we made had to be able to fit through a straw because he was, his face was all wired up. So, but that's not untypical or atypical of how a man reacts to challenges. He just, sometimes they jump there and they think about later whether or not they're going to make it. They have a propensity to save the mate, to plant the flag, to run through the mud. That's what God created man to enjoy. And the last point that we learned, that man is created in the image of God. Since God doesn't have a physical body, think about that, then this must be God's nature as well, too, that he is in a spiritual sense, has a sense of masculinity. In Exodus 15, verse 3, it says, "The Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name. There's a battle raging around us." And 1 Peter says this as well. It says that there's an adversary, the enemy, walks around us like a roaring lion. And there's an element of maleness that God created to want to defeat and to overcome. And sometimes we as a church emaciate this male drive. We try to make it to try to blend it and condemn it in sometimes wild attempts. But this, but God has said his very nature itself is masculine. Job 39, here's God speaking. He says, did you give the horse his strength or clothe his neck with a flowing mane? You make him leap out like locusts, striking terror with proud snorting. He paws fiercely, rejoicing in his strength, and charges into the fray. He laughs at fear and afraid, and he's afraid of nothing. He does not shy away from the sword, and the quiver rattles against his side, along with the flashing spear and lance. In frenzied excitement, he eats up the ground. He cannot stand still when the trumpet sounds, and the blast of the trumpet snorts aha. He catches the scent of battle from afar, and shouts of commanders, and the battle cry. It's a vivid description of the masculine side of God, wouldn't you say? He had provided a clear look into his nature. You can even go to the New Testament, and what does Paul write about? He writes about shields and swords and helmets, that there is a battle going on. So when we sometimes try to diminish those points, that's how God created us. And yet, even in the church in general, sometimes men are viewed as passive. But I don't think that's how we were created. We are in the middle of a battle, and we should succumb to those attempts to pacify men. And while women play an important role, there are times when men are needed to step forward and use their strength and determination to battle the threats against the church itself. In my life, I've been in some pretty loud situations. I remember standing at the fair and listening to the tractor pulls, and they would pull an 8,000-pound sled with 2,000 horsepower. On the air shows, and the 8071 Blackbird was flying over, and the power of the engines just holds you back. But the most powerful noise I think I've ever heard in my life is the sound of men's voices at a Promise Keepers conference. 60,000 men singing in unison and singing to God. No concert, no sound system has ever come closer to that than the Promise Keepers' time of worship and time spent praising God, and 60,000 voices in unison. I've only ever heard some strength in my life. You have to remember, we worship the Lion of Judah. Someone pointed out once that sometimes the church tends to defog the Lion of Judah, but it is not. That's not who he is. He is powerful, he's formidable, and he's formidable. One modern writer said that by doing this, we actually take away who God is. And so the clip from Gillette that beamed into our homes and our smartphones and our computers did have a cutting edge about some of the failures of men. And I'm going to concede some of that. When our family went to a church in Bothell, we had a men's ministry there. And the men's minister quit, and the pastor came up to me and said, you know, would you like to take that over? And no idea what I did. Was doing so I did. One of our first events, we had several churches in the area gather around, and we were able to get a great speaker and stuff like that. One of the mega churches in the area had a full-time men's minister, so I went to pick his brain. I said, what things should I watch out for? What's important? What's the key to success? And he was the largest African American man. He stopped and went, no. He said, men are very simple. He said, you have three things that you have to watch out for. He said, number one, anger, controlling their temper. He said, number two is spending. So women get a lot of times get the bad rap there. He said, it's actually the men with their gambling, sometimes their electronics, their bass boats, and everything like that, that actually cause more problems within the family. And he said, and the final one is the biggie, which is, physical and sexual temptations. In our era, that includes pornography. So I checked them off really quickly. Emotional control, financial control, and physical or sexual control. And if you look at it, most of the spiritual challenges that faces man today is controlling the impulses that we were created with. And so I quickly scratched that sentence out of my notes there. It said, the majority of our spiritual challenges are rooted in controlling the impulses that are at the very core of how we're created. And I changed it. I said, no, it's how our nature, our fallen nature, has nurtured it. It's not God who created us that way, but our fallen nature is what causes the problem. While God created man with strong propulsions, unless they're directed in a safe and healthy direction, they can do tremendous, tremendous damage. Men learn early that they can accomplish much through action and through perseverance. They can also accomplish much harm. I was perusing Facebook this week, and there's a large quote there, and it started, I want a divorce. The first time I heard those words was on our honeymoon. She wrote this, that after every curse, every name that she was called, every shove, she believed it would get better. The writer went on to describe how it was constant manipulation and abuse in her relationship. It didn't stop until she called the domestic violence helpline. And she ultimately had to leave the relationship. This isn't the story that happened in California and Hollywood. This isn't a story from New York. This is actually in Linden, a lady in her 20s. And she actually spent much time at this church. If masculinity is not held in check, man's fallen nature can begin to overtake our very souls. There is the capability of great danger. Man can destroy his wife, his children, and it can destroy his family's future the New Testament has some of the strongest language elevating women in the ancient text. Some have tried to claim that Christianity devalues women. It does not at all. In fact, when Jesus needed a witness for his resurrection, he chose women. When Mary and Martha both were there at his feet, Jesus looked at both of them and said, drop what you're doing and listen to this. Listen to my teaching. That was very completely unorthodox for that time and that era. The Apostle Peter emphasized that esteem should permeate our relationships with women. Chapter 3, verse 7 says, husbands, in the same way, consider as you live with your wives, treat them with respect. And here's a comment, here's something that many men miss. My wife and I are part of a group of young people that were, this many years ago, that were just getting married, just starting off their marriages. And we made this observation, we said it's very interesting. There's kind of there are two fields of men, divided into two different philosophies. One was they competed with their wives. And that was kind of interesting. They saw, instead of seeing them as their teammate, they saw them as somebody that they competed with, or somebody that, when there were accolades we handed out, who got them. The other group, the other men were the group that elevated their wives, that gave them all the credit, and you know, if there were any jokes about them or anything like that, they protected them. But you know, it's interesting. That's, you know, how you treat women is how you will actually will determine the amount of relationship and the quality of that relationship that you will have. If you build up your wife, and in essence, you're building up yourself, because they are one part of you. Now, it's easy to do this in your first year of marriage. What about your 10th year of marriage? What about your 20th year of marriage? Are you still lifting her up? Are you still praising her? Are you still seeing all the positive in her? And that's one of the things that's challenging. So, one of the challenges faced by men here is today that we are inundated with pornography and the opportunity to fail in our marriages. They had a lawyer once on TV a couple years ago, and they were asking him, it was a divorce lawyer, and he said, what's the one thing that you can do and tell your clients to prevent divorce? And he said, you know, watch out for social media, stay out of places you shouldn't be. He said, a third of my practice is people that met others outside of their marriage that were on Facebook, that were on other social media. So a full third of his clients were there with former flames, with high school flames, and it's become too easy. So I answer the question and say, is masculinity toxic? Is it what the Gillette corporations say it is? And I say no. Because God created masculinity in himself, a reflection of it. It can be a powerful force in the spiritual battle that rages all around us. When it is properly directed, when it is harnessed, it can be a catalyst for change. And properly used, masculinity can lead our families through this challenging time. And my challenge to the men that are here tonight is to live holy lives and be that weapon that God created you to be. That takes on the battle that is all around us. Be a beacon in this dark, dark world. And then harness the power of biblical masculinity as you go through this week. Thank you.